Blog Talk Radio.
I got the right number here.
Is that clock 2 minutes behind?
Yeah, I keep. That's always. I have to.
Okay, I'm gonna. I'll get him.
You got him?
I got him.
Okay. And ladies, when we get started, if you guys don't mind remaining silent when we first start, just until she gets the introduction, that would be amazing.
Okay, we're just starting like maybe 3 minutes behind.
Okay, all right, tell him I'm going to mute his mic. I'm going to hear him on here.
Okay, all right, he heard you. Okay.
All right, here we go.
Okay, y'all are all set whenever y'all are ready.
Here we go.
I can't wait too far to turn back now. Something in me telling me keep going. I was always taught I can't back down. Finish what I thought is all I know. I got some people who've been doubting me since day one. They see me walking off a cliff and wouldn't say nothing. When I'm meeting them, ain't none of them around. Keep that energy when you think that I'm down. When I'm
guys, hey, yes, we made it back in here another Sunday. Oh, man, I'm so happy to be back. I swear, it's just not right when I'm not here with you all. Yes, but we're back. It is our final show for the year, but we'll be back in, you know, live and live in color in 2022. Inshallah, we'll be back. But you know how we do. Welcome to 2020 Vision, baby. Yes, turn up. Turn all the way up. I'm so excited. I have a phenomenal show for you guys tonight, full of phenomenal women. Oh, I couldn't wait to do this show. This show is near and dear to my heart. You know, I always say that, but it's all near and dear to my heart. Women empowerment, women beautiful, women in all their essence, women the first to grace this earth, just women, just woman, just women. Ooh, y'all know how it is. Y'all know what I mean. Don't act like y'all don't know what I mean. But anyway, y'all gonna know what I mean. Let me first introduce my first guest. Her name is Annette Bibley Oliver. She is the everything woman. She is the go-to woman. She is the producer, the stylist, the everything, the brand coordinator, just the go-to for the stars, for the people, and such a beautiful soul. You guys, give a warm welcome to Annette Bibley Oliver. There you go.
Hey. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an amazing journey, and I feel so honored to be among this group of phenomenal women today. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, she's glowing, honey. Look
thank
at
you,
her. She is
you.
Glowing.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
And my second guest, I would love to welcome, hailing from Georgia. And she's another phenomenal woman. She's TV host, actress, entrepreneur, as well as the woman with the plan. Y'all give it up for Miss Mona J.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. And also, last but definitely not least, we have this special addition to the show. I mean, these women are going to really share their compelling stories with us. You guys are not going to be able to take your eyes off this off the screen, as well as if you're listening on Blog Talk, you're not going to be able to take, you know, your ear, you know, off of the phone. You're going to just, you're going to be just mesmerized with all of these beautiful, phenomenal messages of triumph. I want to give a warm welcome to the multi-talented, the multi-dimensional Miss JJ. You guys,
hello,
give her,
queen.
Yes, give her a welcome, you guys.
Hello, queens. Mm-hmm. Hello, queens. I am so honored to be here. Thank you, and to be around and amongst some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful queens. I'm humbled. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming. We appreciate you, and we're going to love hearing your story. It's on fire, honey, and we can't wait. But y'all know how I like to do before we get started. First of all, I want to give out my shout-outs. Shout-outs. Let's shout-out Dina because, you know, she beat this face, honey. She always does. Yes, she does. Let's shout-out Keisha because she keeps this hair together for me. Give him a hand clap, Tony. Yeah. Just want to shout-out the people, family and friends. You know, stay safe. You know, hold on to your loved ones. You know, you never know what tomorrow may bring. But hold on to your loved ones. Let's just shout out family at this time. Whatever you do, whatever you celebrate, this is the time for us all to come together, you know. And I also want to shout out my, you know, my UBN Go family. Tony, thank you for holding me down, for real.
You're welcome.
Throughout this time, you know, through all the ups and downs and through all the changes. So I definitely want to shout out family and everybody's family. I want to send you love, life, and light. From 2020 Vision and Drip the Mic Network and UBN Go Studios. So let's just, you know, give them a hand clap. So let's get some TikTok videos going on. You know, ladies, this is like one of my favorite parts of the show. We show TikTok videos and we get to, you know, have our little comments and commentary on these videos. Sometimes we laugh, sometimes we cry. Let's see what we got today, Tom.
Is it me? Am I the drama? I don't think I'm the drama. Am I the bad guy? I don't think I'm the bad guy.
He is so cute. I don't care if he's the bad guy. I love him. He's so cute.
Adorable.
Little baby. Who do we have to thank for that one, Tony?
Kale Lori.
Kale Lori. Thank you, Kel, for submitting that one. You know what, you guys, I love these TikTok submissions. I peruse TikTok and Instagram looking for content to show on the show, and I love the fact that you guys are always sending me stuff to show, so keep it coming. Thank you so much, and you definitely will get your shout-outs for sending in these phenomenal videos. It's a phenomenal day, a phenomenal show. What do we have next?
Ooh, I couldn't wait to share this one. This one's going to touch somebody in their soul.
Sometimes God will put you through something, not to test you, but to test the people around you to see if they really are who they say they are. So pay attention, because real situations will always expose the fake people. Have a blessed day, y'all.
Facts. What'd you say, facts, Mona?
Facts.
Speak on it for a second, for me.
I experienced this one too many times.
Uh-huh.
Think that the test was for me, but it actually was for somebody else, and it showed their true confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them passed the test.
You say they passed the test?
They most of them didn't pass.
Oh, okay,
the test.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're
found in my.
What you saying, Ned? I hear you. I feel you. What?
I just didn't speak because that is so true. Because I always say when things happen, people come into your life for reasons unknown, and God sometimes put them in your life to either teach you a lesson or teach them a lesson, but it's like a weeding process. And yeah. I think if someone come into your life and when they show their true colors, you definitely realize that they weren't meant to be there, and you grow. You use those processes and that those lessons, and you grow, you know, one time bitten, twice shy. So I definitely say speak on that.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
And I definitely agree with the queen that said something that really resonated. And the key words were to grow. A lot of times what we do, we get stuck in the hurt, or we get the hurt of the lesson. And not realize that, as Mona J said, or the other queen said, that it's a sifting moment. So God is allowing them to be sifted to see whether they're strong enough to go to that next journey with you, because everybody can't go to that next level.
That's right.
So some people have to be sifted to see if they can go to that next level. And in that siftness, as they, as the gentleman said, the true them will show. And unfortunately, the true them can sting you. But the sting is, as the queen said, to help you grow, not for you to stay in that hurt and pain, and not for you to make another person pay for a crime that they did not commit.
That's
it's for you to be wiser so that you do not attract the same type of energy.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well said. I concur. Yeah. Well, who do we have to thank for that video, Tony?
We have, it is Marta, oh my gosh, that's a long one. Marta Vias Young.
See, now you know how I feel when I'm trying to read those handles. Those handles be crazy. It makes
they got
in the pronunciation. The handles make me feel like I can't read, like, at all. But shout out to you. Shout out to you. And then what's the next one we have?
I'll show you guys the next video.
I know who I am. I love who I am. I like what I do, and I like how I do it, and I like my mistakes, and I like the way I learn, and I like the pace with which I learn mistakes. I don't want to be anybody else but me. And by knowing this, I want to continue figuring out who the f*** I am. That's it.
Annette, for some reason, that when I saw that video and was, you know, choosing that one to show today, it just reminded me of you. I don't know. It just has your essence to it. I can't put my finger on it, but it just has your essence written all over it to me.
Oh, my God. I live in that moment. Mm-hmm. As I said, it was just picking up from what we just discussed. Mm-hmm. It's about, I always says, you have to be your true self. And being in Hollywood, moving from New York via the Caribbean, I moved in 1992 from the Caribbean, went to school at NYU, and moved from New York in 2010. And it's been such a learning process. It's a journey, but in that journey, you find yourself and you find your strength in all those uphills, because we have so many valleys. We go up, it's highs and lows. You find your strength, and you decide that you have to live in your truth every single day just for your peace of mind, because if you don't, it just basically takes away and eats away at your soul. So that video is like, as you say, that is like an essence of me. I try to live in my truth every day, and I'm not going to lie. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes I can't say the word, mess
you can
up.
Say what it is.
You fucked up sometimes, and you actually have to sometimes
own it.
And when you are, Mona says just now, when you're grown enough to own that you fucked up, it just makes you a stronger, better person. And you have to strive every day to be your best you. And that's what I do every day. I try to be my best self. I don't compete with anyone. And sometimes things comes into your life, situation, people, and sometimes it don't work out. And I use those as my building blocks. I don't use them as my stumbling blocks, because when stumbling blocks show at me, I try to detour, go around it, to go through those, but I use those as stumbling blocks, and that's the reason I'm still standing. Yeah. And, you know, it's a hard lesson, and it's a hard road for us as being women in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
We know the struggle that we go through, but you have to live in your authentic self, and you have to live in your truth and speak your truth every day, because people see that. And I think I applaud. That was Zoe. Was that Zoe video?
Saldana.
Zoe Saldana. I love her dearly, but that is 100% truth. So I'm going to let the other ladies weigh in, because I know you guys have something similar story. We're a woman in the industry, so I know you guys have been through those valleys, and we all have. So I'm going to let you guys weigh in on that one, too.
I just want to say, Queen, and is it Annette? Did I say that correct?
Annette, yes, correct.
Yeah, great, awesome. Oh man, that when you said be the best who you can be, and Mona J can contest to this, that is my slogan. Be one of my slogans. Be the best that you can be, because no one is better at being you than you.
Mm-hmm.
It is okay that we make mistakes in life because we are not perfect. No one has arrived. What is not okay is to learn from it and to grow from it and to own it. That's not okay.
Yeah.
But you make mistakes. We error. We error every day, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. Either way, you should be woman enough, mature enough, even for the men, king enough to apologize for your mistake and learn and grow and move forward and then have amnesia. I don't have time to concentrate on the mistake that I made in saying there. What I have to do is concentrate on what I got from it and what I learned from it and how I can grow to the next level and continue to be around like-minded people that believe in growing and believe in climbing and not looking at my mistakes as failures, but looking at it as stepping stones to the goals of where I'm supposed to be in love, to being a better me, to helping me be a better person so that I can leave my mark on this world in a positive way. I have another thing saying that I'm building my empire and leaving my legacy. And the empire is not necessarily money, although that's part of it, but that empire is the wealth of knowledge and that I have within me that I want to leave for my children's children's children, the legacy of who I am, the legacy of what I was purposed to do, and those around me. So the energy that we give off, it should be comfortable in your skin. That sister on TikTok, she hit it. Hey, I own mine. This is mine. Don't ridicule me for mine. This is my walk. This is my growth. And what's for you is you, your growth and your walk and your mistakes. But grow from you. Be you and be happy with being you. And be the best that you can be. Don't try to be another person. I'm not. I'm a little woman. Mona J said this to me all too many times. She say, when you walk in that room, you demand everyone's attention. I'm like, what are you talking about? But it hit me. I am comfortable with who I am, and I'm okay with that. So I can be around beautiful queens, and there's no competition. I can be around women that are doing their thing, and there's no competition because I know who I am. And I think when we get that, we'll get a lot further in life.
Yep. All right. Thank you. Thank you. That was very well said. I concur as well. You know, this is, we're going to be doing this all day, you guys, all night. This is the type of conversation that we're going to get into. And, you know, I had a couple of more to show, but that's okay. Let's get into the stories. And I definitely want to start out with Annette. You guys, you're just in for a treat. You're in for a treat. I met Annette through a team of music producers as well as music business consultant, Grammy Award winning. He's like, don't be sitting here and not say it. All right.
You know, he will call you that.
He's going to call you because he's going to call me.
He's going to call you and be like, six times.
Six time Grammy Award winning. And how many Emmys is it now?
Maybe three.
Three Emmys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has a Tony. Only thing he doesn't have is the Oscar.
Yes.
But we're working on that. He will be an EGOT holder pretty soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was introduced to this lovely light through this team that's, you know, that has been working with me on several projects. And she came in originally as a stylist. But she was so much more. She wound up being creative director on a portion of my project. And every time, I always tell her, every time my phone ring and she's on the other end, it's always a blessing. It is so many things to tell you about her, and we're going to, you know, get into her story. But she also produces for the Oscars, as well as she produces the after party for the Oscars.
The only diversity and inclusion after party we started at about four years ago, 2016. So we do the Griot Gala, which is their diversity and inclusion, because we saw the need for diversity, and that's the year when Oscar So Black. So we found an amazing partner in Remy Martin, and they were so eager to jump on board and become our sponsor, and that has grown. 2020
was our last Oscar that we did, and we actually, it was such a success that Remy Martin got bought out, which is very sad, by Courvoisier, who now we have like a 3 to 5 year contract with them as our title sponsor for the diversity and inclusion. So, yeah.
And then you just recently went into producing film.
Film and television. Yeah, I'm getting into that. It's as I said, it's a journey. I've been in the industry 2008. I started a showroom called Dreamhouse Marketing Group. And as Amara says, I took a leap of faith. I used to be in the medical field, and I was a physical therapist graduate, and I started to work at HBO as an exercise physiologist, and I just got intrigued by film and television and the back behind the scenes. So I started working in 2001 with them on some production, and I really enjoyed it. So I actually went back and did an image consulting course, and in 2008 opened a showroom in New York called Dreamhouse Marketing Group. And the reason I opened the showroom was I saw a need as a stylist and a wardrobe stylist, because I had a day job. And as a wardrobe stylist, it was a lot. You run around like 8-10 showrooms a day, and you have to pull wardrobe, and it's the pay is good if you actually are union, but if you're not union, you just running around all day to pick out these fabulous wardrobes. So I opened that showroom so I can curate the designers. And we started trying to help our own. You start trying to help up-and-coming designers, which was a kind of lesson learned, but a disaster, because when you're doing that, a lot of these designers doesn't have the bankroll to basically, they want the spotlight. They want to have product placement in these shows, but they don't have the marketing dollars like the bigger brands would have. So then you end up basically every month when it's time for retainers to pay, you hearing, my cat died, my grandma in the hospital, the list goes on. So you live and learn. So I met a young lady, Jane Ubell, who became my mentor, and she was a producer of Golden Globe's Backstage Gift Bag. She was known as the Gift Bag Guru. And when she came to my showroom, I had a whole lot of products for the gift bags. And she said to me, I want to show you how to make money in this business. And that was in 2009. She flew me to L.A. and she was producing the Golden Globes backstage. And at the end of the show, I maybe garnered about 8 to 10 products to put in the bag. And she gave me a check, $15,000.
Wow.
Says, so the brands you have, this is called product placement, and what you're going to do is you're going to curate the client by giving them the deliverables, what you can do. And she don't just put the gifts in the gift bag. She then gets major promotional and media placement for them posts. So that's how my career started in doing that. And the following year, I started working with Ed Hardy. Unfortunately, Christian Audinger passed away, but I started working him with marketing, and I got offered a marketing director job to move to LA in 2012.
Okay.
2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history. I opened that same showroom that I had in New York here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I started continue marketing brands.
So you were in New York when
yes.
you first, okay. And, but when you first came to the States, you were in New York.
Yeah, I was in New York. I went to NYU. So I was in New York from 1992.
Okay.
1992 until 2010. Then I moved to LA, and I had my showroom here, and we actually started getting we started doing gifting suites for Backstage Soul Train Music Awards, the ESPN Awards, Super Bowl, etc. Because we had the brands. Brands was coming to us to basically be put in for placement, etc. And we wouldn't just only do that. We had the media relationships, so we would basically get the brands onto People Magazine, Life and Style, Cosmo, the must-have that you see on those pages. We were all doing that. It's called advertorials that we would basically every month we get sets of advertorials because magazine has these pages that has to be filled, and they would call marketing companies like myself, send out email blasts and says, hey, so we'll sell you one page at an 80% discount. You fill it. So we started doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And from my deliverables working with brands, I understood the deliverables, because a lot of times you would know you're representing a brand and they would just call and ask you for 150 or 200 products. You'll give them it and then you never hear about it. You don't know who gets the brand. You don't know. So a lot of, I understand on that side, if you're taking someone product, you have to give them deliverables. And sometimes you might be so busy, you might put it into someone else's hand and there's a shortcoming. But you have to make sure when you call someone and says, hey, I need you to sponsor, you have to make sure that you get those deliverables. And with that, I was able to build great relationships in the industry. And a lot of people would call me for stuff. So when I started working with Amera, they call me and I have a showroom here in LA and a lot of stylists come to my showroom. We dress people for a lot of award shows and red carpets. So a lot of people would call me and if I don't have the items, I would either use my relationships with either Neiman Marcus or Saks or Bloomingdale's and we will actually call the bigger designers if it's a big client and we would get them what they want for the red carpet. So when they call me about Amera, I says, well, I don't style anymore and I'm going to basically send you over to Bibi, one of the stylists that I have. I have about four or five stylists that I work with. And they were like, no, this is a client of ours. We need you to work on her project. So I brought along Bibi.
Mm-hmm.
He was amazing.
He's a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's an amazing stylist. Mm-hmm. And I actually connected with Amera, so I was present there. On set, and I think the rest is history. Go
yeah.
from there.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to your. You said you were in the medical industry. I want to go back to those days.
Yeah.
You were. So, what did you do in the medical field?
So, as a girl, I was born in St. Vincent. I grew up in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And when you grow up with West Indian parents, your goal is to basically. They don't want to hear. They don't even have styling. They don't know what the hell stylist
yeah,
is
yeah.
in LA. So the traditional route is you go to school. You had to go to school to become a doctor,
yeah.
a lawyer,
yeah.
a nurse, or something.
Yeah.
So that was the goal. So I moved to New York. I went to University of the West Indies, and then I moved to New York, and I actually started to basically work. And go to school here, and I went to NYU for physical therapy with a minor in sports medicine, which I graduated in 1996. And my husband was in the music industry, and we're like night and day,
yeah.
Amera would tell you. I don't know. Yeah. We're like night and day. My husband is a guy who will say in the street,
yeah.
you know,
uh-huh.
and he actually was managing producers at the time, and he's doing he was doing a show called G-String Divas on HBO.
Oh, my God. What does G-String Divas entail?
It was actually a strip show about going to the grimy, dung, and out clubs of New York City. G-String Divas,
okay.
It was really that. And so they started that show, mm-hmm. and my husband actually said to me, hey, I was walking through HBO, and there was an ad on the wall, and it says exercise physiologist wanted. What is that?
Okay.
And I said, it's a glorified physical therapist. It's basically when a company like HBO has the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So they would basically have like a private gym mm-hmm. for their vice president, their
mm-hmm.
their vice president and their upper launch executives where they can go and do like a program training.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, it's basically a glorified personal trainer. That they do. So I says, give me the information. And I apply, and I was in a male-dominated field.
Mm-hmm.
They called me like about a week after, and I actually got the job. And from being at HBO, that's how I started getting exposed into the entertainment business because they were shooting Sex and the City, and
mm-hmm.
I would go down and just be on set.
Yes.
And one of my clients was Chris Spencer, who was the vice president of HBO, and Chris Stifel, who was also in charge of programming an HBO documentary. So they were my clients.
Yeah.
They were my physical therapy clients. So I would go down and hang out with them until 2 a.m. And then they start. One of the girls was pregnant. And sometimes I would call on set and say, hey, I'm coming down. Do you guys want coffee? Do you
mm-hmm.
guys want
yeah.
me to bring you anything?
Yeah.
And she says, you know what, could you stop with Katrin Melandrina and grab wardrobe for us? And I was like, okay. So a couple of times I stopped and grabbed it. And one time I went to Nicole Miller
mm-hmm.
to grab wardrobe and nothing was pulled. And the girl just sent me into this room and says, oh, there. And I was like, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, So I called the costume designer, that's what they call themselves on television shows, and she says, so you know the story, right? Because you was there. So this is what we're looking for. Just pull. And I was like, there is whole room of shit. So I probably spent maybe 2.5 hours and they kept calling me. And I was like, I don't know how to do this. I don't do this. You know? But when I came back, she was like, oh, you got an eye for this. You pulled some good stuff. So I started helping her. She was pregnant. I sat together and everything like that. And, you know.
And a star was born.
You know, I actually was like, this is kind of cool. Yeah. So I started out as my little side hustle. And people who knew I was working at HBO would call me and be like, yo, how can I get my clothes on my husband's friends, you know, guys in the street?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yo, how can I get my clothes on the wire? How can I go? So I basically started doing stuff like that and got my first television credit as the wardrobe stylist. I lucked up on that, but it wasn't even meant to be. But that's how I actually started into the wardrobe and styling world, then into image consulting, and from that started into marketing and branding. And as you all know, sometimes you never know where you're going to end up in life, and it's always a journey. So if you can learn from your journey, I say sometimes, I don't know if my mom would be happy, God rest her soul, or dead, because no longer in that field.
I just wanted you to be successful, though.
Yeah.
And that you are.
Yeah. But anytime any disaster happened, I'm always the first to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
When 9/11 happened, I was actually at HBO, and I actually held the entire, we curated the entire HBO team to go down to 9/11, including all the vice president, and help. And one of the things I always say about Diddy, he was one of the first person when we call and say, hey, we needed to feed firefighters down at Ground Zero.
Mm-hmm.
2 days after 9/11, he was like, come by. And his mom, they was running that restaurant on 20-something Street. And every night we would go pick up food from Justin's.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows this. And he was going through that time, the high publicity case with J-Lo.
Yes.
It happened at the same time.
Yes.
And he still made the time to basically not only donate food, sometimes come down to Ground Zero. So I always say, no matter what anyone say about Diddy, that man has a heart of gold.
Yeah.
And when there's an opportunity, he rises to the occasion. And a lot of people probably don't know that side of him, but we got to know that he fed the entire Ground Zero team during 9/11, and then obviously months after, when the guys was there for months, going into 6-7 months, other restaurants started giving. But he was one of the first restaurants who started feeding the 10 house, and the 10 house was the fire department that was right in front of the World Trade Center that actually got hit. So and HBO was, we actually held that whole entire, the medical team and everything. So, yeah.
It seems like blessings follow you, and you continue to give them out and be a vessel for them. So, you know, I'm not surprised that, you know, Diddy connected and collaborated with you and helped be a blessing to others. You know, I don't want to keep her all to myself, ladies. I know you have questions for her as well. So I'm going to let you guys ask her a couple of questions before I ask my final questions of her. Mona, did you have anything that you wanted to ask Annette?
Before you got into the medical field, what was your dream? Was medical field your dream before you got into the medical field?
I was born in St. Vincent, and St. Vincent is a smaller Caribbean island. Not even a lot of people hear of it. When I actually speak, a lot of people say, hey, is that in Jamaica? And I'm like, no, it's one of the lesser Antilles. So, I don't even think I had a dream or dream that big of where or what I wanted to be. I just know that I always wanted to be something, you know, be successful. I really had no idea or clue where I would land. And at that time, as you growing up, my aunt was a medical, she was in a medical field. She ran the RN department at the Kingston St. Vincent Hospital. So you see her going to work, and you know she saves lives. And you know in the Caribbean,
we have to go to church 7 days a week sometimes. So on Saturday, you got to go to the hospital to go visit the kids and go pray for them,
okay.
You know, and stuff like that. So that was what was around me. So
You're accustomed to doing acts of service.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, you know, I really don't think I had a dream at that time. I think after I started dreaming bigger, I believe once I migrated to the U.S. and actually was around, when I always say to my kids, I have two boys, when you surround yourself with positive light and positive energy, you can't help but, you know, it rubs off on you. And I always say, no matter where you're from or who you are in life, if you can just find some light. And sometimes people get lost along the way. And sometimes if you can give that next person a light, just by your presence, it means so much to them, because it actually, they're like, oh my God, that person, as busy as they are, or that light that they have, they took that time out to basically, you know, rub that light on me. And that was, I always say, I opened doors for a lot of people, because there's so many people that has opened doors for me that I never thought would have been open. So whenever I can give that chance back, I always do. Because it's actually, you probably sometimes don't even see the blessings coming, but sometimes they're there, and you have to sit down and pinch yourself and be like, this is me.
This,
you know,
really
it's called God favor, I believe.
Yes.
But you have to basically be the light.
Yes.
Yeah.
So people can see their way through. Before we move on, Sister JJ, do you have any questions for Annette?
Queen, I don't have any questions. I can just sit here and listen. Anything is like she is confirming like so much, and like she's talking, and I'm like, well, I may have had a question, and she come back and she just was answering a whole lot of things. It's like I hear the humility in her tone. I feel the gratefulness in her energy. I mean, I could just continue to listen to you, Queen.
Thank you.
Well, Annette has worked on so many different projects, from creative director to styling to production to brand coordination. And we just kind of want to, you know, pay homage to some of the things that she's done. She actually just did, on this first clip we're going to show, she just did this styling for this Afrobeat music video, and I actually came to your house that night that you were pulling the wardrobe. It was so beautiful, but it was even more beautiful to see it on and in action. So there's a little clip we have from that that video shoot that I would like to show the people.
Oh, I didn't even know you had this.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Give it a hand clap, Tony. So quiet around here.
Wow. I didn't even know you had that.
Yes, yes. So that was all you, every piece that we saw.
Yeah. The client came to me, and Matt B, he's amazing R&B artist out of Chicago. And he actually was in Los Angeles because he was he had a FYC for your consideration for this upcoming Grammys, and he were working on the Afrobeats project. So he said to me, hey, we have this idea and we want to do a video, and then I just want wardrobe for myself. And then they're young ladies that actually, he says, 2 days after, they says, oh, we have four dancers, which I don't even think you have the clip. But they says, we have four dancers, and they want to get wardrobe for themselves. And I says, absolutely not. I says, because you want it to be cohesive and consistent.
Yeah.
And you want to basically sit with a team that, if you're doing a video, not them going out and shopping for themselves, because they don't know the essence and they don't know
what level of that you heights you're trying to reach.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you have dancers? I said, no, not happen. I said, so I will actually curate the wardrobe for the dancers. Just get me the sizes. And as he was curating the wardrobe, I actually decided to call a designer that I work with out of Kenya, who makes some amazing pieces. And I knew exactly what we wanted, and she actually decided she was going to ship me some stuff. And she shipped some of the pieces, and some was held in customs. America came to my house, and I was like, okay, we're going to have to figure out how to do these wardrobes. And hence the reason we were able to custom those wardrobes from the ground up. I had to go downtown in Los Angeles, and I was like, I'm looking for fringes, and I'm looking for the colors. And I called the designer in the middle of the night, and she was like, okay, so you can cut the fabric this. And we was cutting and gluing because I know how to sew. Well, so we was cutting and gluing, and we was trying to replicate her wardrobe as if she was here. So we actually hired the queen of darkness, which is that model you saw. She's actually one of the top models out of Kenya.
Oh, she's gorgeous. She is gorgeous. We actually got a little bit of what Annette is talking about in action. No, not that one. The next clip. Yep. We got you in action. So she's not lying, y'all. No sleep. Oh, no, this one is from your
sister show.
Yeah.
Everyone came, did their fittings. I am so psyched. So everything at DC is all packed and ready to go. So the stylists tomorrow can do their thing. Shout out to our amazing sponsor, Newman Marcus, came true.
Good morning.
Okay.
I know it's hard to wake up because...
Yeah, so that's just you burning the midnight oil. Really quick, tell us about that show, and then I want to move on to the rest of the ladies. But tell us about the wardrobe that you were actually the show that you were pulling the wardrobe for in that particular clip with the sisters from Africa,
Gambia.
Yeah, Gambia. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm working on a project called The Sisters Show, and it's five amazing sisters from Gambia, and they came to the U.S. to go to school here. Two of the sisters are medical doctors. One is actually the marketing director for Christian Dior. And we have one is a Pfizer CEO, and one is a dear friend of mine who is an entrepreneur here. But their story is so, one of the reasons I took the project is in 2013, their brother decided to go back to Gambia to start a business. And he was kidnapped and murdered by their Gambian dictator, Jammet. And for the last 5 years, these sisters, as strong women we are, they actually burned the midnight oil. They used the power of social media and media to get in touch with the Justice Department to remove this dictator, Jammet, from power. And it took them 5 years. But with the help of the media in 2019, just before COVID, they successfully removed that dictator, Jammet.
Yeah.
So he went into hiding in Equatorial Guinea, which is another African nation. And the sisters during COVID found their voice. Instead of being victims, they decided that they were going to go ahead and not be victims, but use their platform and the platform of media and basically tell their story. And in about, I think after their first two shows, they garnered 1 million views. And
wow.
The network called Fatu Network in Africa came to them and says, hey, we would like to put together a talk show called The Sister Show. And their last name is Caesar, so it's called The Caesar 5. If you actually Google, you'll see their
Caesar 5.
The
okay.
Caesar, S-E-E-S-A-Y, Caesar 5. You'll see their amazing story there. But CNN and everyone picked up their story. So they're not they decided once they were starting the talk show, they just wanted not to just be victims, but just to shed light on the struggle of women and also everyday things that happen to us. And it's something that you're not going to see. It's funny
and they bring non-political issue, but they bring, it's five siblings, so they have crazy chemistry, but they're all different personalities. So we actually set out to basically capture their personalities. And one of the people, when they called me, I reached out to was Neiman Marcus in Beverly Hills, and we was like, hey, we're working with these five phenomenal women, and I would love to see if we can utilize you guys as our sponsor. And they was like, absolutely, what do you need? And I was like, wardrobe. So we shot 9 shows, mm-hmm. California Creative, 9 shows over 3 days. We're shooting 3 to 4 episodes a day at the Michael Vincent Academy. So that wardrobe you saw was for that story.
Beautiful.
That show. So beautiful. That aired in March 2020. I'm going to do a shameless plug.
Yeah.
And we'll be at Sundance
yes.
2022.
Yes. On this show, 2020, you're going to get all the pub marketing, everything that you want. You're going to get it here. It's not shameless. That's what we do. Thank you, Annette, for sharing your story with us. We're going to,
thank
you know,
thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we're going to continue, and we're going to get into these other stories. And, you know, then after that, we're going to just have a good old, you know, ladies, you know, women just sitting here talking and, you know, showing encouragement to one another and others and giving some advice and trading some of our secrets. We're going to get into that. But first, I would love to engage Miss Mona J. How
hey.
Are you?
happy to be here.
Yes, yes.
We are feeling that love.
That red is, girl, did you see that? Oh, my God. And that... Oh, she's gonna is it an RN or her hand? Okay, we can hear you. You're gonna go out a little bit, so move a little back from your microphone. Yeah, so because when it gets hot, that's what happens. It blinks out.
Can y'all hear me now?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we're feeling this look though.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
From the Oscar Salas herself.
No. We need you to stand up so we can see that look. That
yes.
looks like a fire jumper
yes,
you have on.
Ooh, get in the camera, honey. Ooh, giving. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, you do. people on Instagram jealous. They can't see here. Let me show the So Mona, she is a TV show host, a red carpet host, an actress. And again, I like to call her the woman with the plan extraordinaire. Because if there is something to be done, she's gonna come up with the plan. Mm-hmm. And she's done that for her own life. She has such a story of triumph as well. And I just can't wait to get into your story. Mona, can you tell us where you're from originally?
Okay, I am. Can y'all hear me good?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so I am originally from Athens, Georgia.
Okay.
Many people don't know it's the home of the Georgia Bulldogs, University of Georgia. It's like an hour and a half away from Atlanta. So I was born and raised in Athens. Most of my life, I grew up in what they call, some people call it the hood, some
okay.
people call it the project. I grew up in Athens Housing Authority, which was Nellie B.
Mm-hmm.
My family never had any, you know, money. We came from poverty. My mom was a single mom of 4 kids, one boy and 3 girls. But my brother didn't grow up with us. He grew up with his dad. So my mama had 3 kids with her up until my sister was 16 and she moved out. So it was only me and my sister right above me. Grew up, childhood, you know, didn't really know that we were broke.
Right,
know?
Right.
My mom kept it well. You know, we had clothes, we had shoes, we had food in our mouth. So it wasn't until I started getting older and I seen certain kids with the Jordans and mm-hmm. I had British Knights that I realized we weren't as, you know, good as but I was still happy.
Yes.
But growing up with my mom having hard times and not being able to stabilize herself, we had to raise ourselves, me and my sister right above me, more than an average little girl. So by 12 years old, I basically been raising myself since I was 12.
Okay.
And had to figure it out. at 12 years old, we moved in with my oldest sister, mm-hmm. who had, you know, long gone from my mom, a physical fight with my mom years ago, and she moved with my grandma. So when my mom couldn't afford to take care of me and my sister Toya, we moved with my sister. And by that time, it's like we were cooking. I didn't have my mom, I was an A and B student. Like, I was still a smart little girl. Mm-hmm. I would take school, study by myself. My mom never made any conferences, but I kept my grades up, so they never called her to check to see why a parent didn't show up for conferences. So long story short, going through life, I didn't have any guidance. So by the age of 15, I am pregnant with my son, who some know now my son is a rapper. He signed to Quavo with the Migos, Huncho Records. And so, you know, he's 26 now, but at that time I was a 15-year-old mother with my son. Getting to the age of 15, when I was young, though, my mom put us in ballet, jazz, tap, modern dance. So I grew up thinking I was going to be a dancer. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be Avon Ailey, and, you know, that was my dream. But once I started realizing that we were poor, I was like, well, that may not be it. So I get pregnant, teenage mother, high school dropout. And then I go back and get a GED. I go back and get an associate degree. I go back and get a bachelor's degree, well, associate degree in marketing, and a bachelor's degree in business. And then I worked in management for a while. And then I decided to get an entertainment.
Okay. So, because I know you're a firecracker. I was waiting for that, you know, what, you know, made you take off into flight, you know. And obviously it was that thing stirring up in you. Same like Annette. There's always been that thing stirring up in you where you wanted more.
Yeah.
Coming from a small village or a small town, you know, you knew that there was more out there to go get. And so that thing in you compelled you. So you found yourself in the entertainment industry. And I know you got bit by the bug when you was an extra on one of the BET show networks. And then you decided, I want to be an actress. So, at any point, was there someone to encourage you in that way, or this is all self-motivation or inspiration for you?
Well, I can say it was all self-motivated, but who encouraged me initially at 7 to 8 years old, when I told you I took ballet, jazz,
yes.
modern,
mm-hmm.
lady named Lois Thomas Wright, and she she's Lois Thomas Ewens now, she's married, but she was our instructor. She had went off and she danced with Avon Ailey,
okay.
and she brought skills to the hood.
Okay.
So she came to that recreational center and taught us not only dance, but she taught us unity.
Yes.
She taught us if you don't do nothing with your life, you're going to be working at McDonald's saying, how may I help you all, you know.
Right.
So she, even though that drive was inside of me, she helped push me to say, I'm bigger than where I came from.
Okay.
It's more than selling me for where I'm at.
Right, right. Okay. So that's huge. So she worked for the Avon Ailey Dance Company?
She was a dancer.
Okay.
She was just a dancer, so she didn't work for the company. She was a traveling dancer.
Okay.
So at that point, she did dance with Avon Ailey. He actually took us to one of his shows at one point.
Wow. So that was a spark of light.
Yeah. You know. So as a little girl from the hood,
uh-huh.
not having to go and travel and see that life was bigger than
yeah.
Athens and life was bigger than the hood, that always excited me.
Mm.
And then I had to say I did not have to settle. But yet and still, as I got older, got pregnant, and, you know, started working a regular job, all those dreams started to fade away. What actually brought that back out of me is that I met this guy who, my son was in Little League football, and one of the guys who was a coach at that time, he was actually a millionaire, but he was humble. He came out there, he taught the students. I mean, you know, he was a football coach. And when I started talking to him, I traveled with him.
Mm-hmm.
A businessman, you know, he owned several different companies, and we used to travel, and we used to do things, and I was like, oh, I don't have to settle for Athens, Georgia. I can actually go and pursue my dream. So that is what made me go back and get my associate degree, and it made me go back and get my bachelor's degree.
Where were some of the places that you go? Because I know there is Atlanta right there with, you know, a blooming industry there, but, you know, it sounds like, you know, the journey. We're talking, you know, maybe 10 years, 10, 15 years back. So where were some of the places that you went to that took you out of your comfort zone and made you start to press forward in regards to your career in entertainment and traveling to those bigger places?
Well, I'll say this. Atlanta still was that place that made me to entertainment.
Okay.
We would just travel to different states. I had never went overseas. My first time going overseas was actually this year.
Okay.
And we'll tell that story of how I got to Hollywood. He would just take me from different states. So I would go to, you know, the aquarium in Tennessee, the beach in Florida, you know, go to Miami and just different states, go to the cabins. And so I just got to see, because I was a person, you know how some people never leave their environment?
Yes.
If I know in Athens, they have never left here.
Yes.
Matter of fact, my son's grandma, she's never been on a plane and doesn't have a desire to get on a plane. and I've always wanted, you know, to see the world.
Yes.
Being with him encouraged me. Mm-hmm. But being in Atlanta, when I got to Atlanta, I met this guy named DeMills. He was with Esquire DJ Radio.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced me to Young L.A. Young L.A. was signed to Grand Hustle at the time. And I started being up at, you know, the studios with T.I. and the old Grand Hustle crew. And I was in the music industry. So I started trying to manage producers. Mm-hmm. I was hosting radio shows, got to interview Curtis Blow and a couple other famous people. And so at first I was just going to pursue music.
Mm-hmm.
I got to thinking, like, when I was younger, I wanted to, I acted in my first stage play, Annie.
So pursuing music, you meaning in what way? As far as a management?
In management.
Okay.
I wanted to artists and manage producers and just be involved in the music industry.
Because it seems like you go between the, and at this time, as you were developing yourself, you go between being on the executive side as well as an artist yourself.
Right.
So where are you at with that now? Have you found a balance in that, or how are you feeling?
Denzel Washington.
I'm sorry?
You, Denzel Washington.
All I heard was Denzel Washington, which is enough, but I want to hear the rest.
Know what I mean when I say I'm Denzel Washington?
Okay, that's what you said. You say you're Denzel Washington. Okay, I'm listening.
So Denzel is a director, producer, writer, but he's also in front of the scene.
Yes.
So sometimes I could be Mona J, the center of attention, and Mona J, the executive producer.
Yes.
The director. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So great behind the scenes too, but when I'm ready to, like JJ said, I told her, when I step into the room, I'm going to attract that energy.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to know who I am because I come in authentically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
God created us all as conquerors already. He created us perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being myself.
Yes.
And who is to attract themselves to me always does that.
That's right. Well, I think we got a little clip of you in action. It's the YouTube clip, Tony. I just wanted to, you know, kind of look at your history and, you know, when you were kind of getting into this thing and how you developed, because obviously you know how to speak to the people, and, you know, we want to open up to you when you're talking right now. So I'm sure you're a great host. So let the people see Miss Mona J in action.
Balance TV, the show called Occupative Efficiency Day with me and Rodney Perry, comedian. And it's, I think it's one of the only African-American comedy shows on television right now. You got to check it out. Bounce TV, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Central. Don't miss it. So you are actually acting on there. DJing fun, or are you a DJ on there? I'm DJing, and I'm hosting. Rodney and I kind of go back and forth and act like idiots and just have fun. You're going to have to check that out. And that's on what Bounce TV. So Bounce TV is the extra. So check your local listing, national television show, Bounce TV, Monday, 9 p.m. So we're going to have to check that out. I haven't seen that yet. I already love Rodney Perry. Yeah. I already love Rodney Perry. So I know it's going to be a comedy, comedy, a funny event. So make sure you check that out. So what else do you have going on? Besides DJing, I'm going to point out Bounce TV. Right. I am currently shooting a reality show. I can't think of it. I'm shooting a reality show right now, so in about 6 months, you'll see me. And you won't,
so you got to give us a little bit like of the concept, you know,
this is not my reality show. Okay. You've seen it before. This is the second season. It's huge. 6 million viewers. And I'm going to do a cast member, and that's all I have.
Oh my God! So look out for it. We already know it's a reality show. So it's probably on VH1.
It might be.
It might. She's not going to reveal all the details, but it's probably on VH1. So you already know her. So make sure that you check her out on VH1 on this reality show as well. And I see some little gentleman over there.
My son, yes, my baby.
Oh my God! He is why I do what I do. I go hard.
I was trying to get him today. He wouldn't do nothing for me. I mean, he has gorgeous eyes. He's just adorable. He's smart. So you see, she's a working woman, but she brings her son out with her to get it in, and that's it.
Hey, so old.
I told you, I'll go find it. Yes. But look at you. You were getting the tea even back then. She was like, well, I don't really want to say nothing, but you like, you just tell us a little bit.
Yeah, he told me she was on Love and Hip Hop, but I knew she was on Love and Hip Hop. I was like, she's
somehow VH1 Love and Hip Hop. Yeah, yeah. Well, I can see you're able to, you know, get it out of people. So, I mean, that's a great thing about a host. So how do you, should I say, how do you serve your acting talent? How, you know, What have you been doing in regards to your acting?
Well, I actually took off for about close to 3 years on acting.
Mm-hmm.
Life took me that way. Mm-hmm. My mom passed away. Ups and downs. I went homeless, mm-hmm. sleeping in my car. So
how do you just breathe past that? How do you just, I went homeless. You said that like, I just put on this red jumpsuit today. And I just did a bang, you know. It was not, you know, the shit we do. Yeah. is what we do. We go home. Mona, can we stop there? And you know, the reason why I'm stopping you there, we were having fun with it, but the reason why I'm stopping you there, you know, there's a huge homeless issue, you know, in Los Angeles, you know, in Southern California, period, because it's one of the most expensive states in our country, areas in our country. And so a lot of people come here for their dreams and wind up living in the streets. And sometimes it's almost come here, their story is, oh, I slept in my car for 3 months. And 90 days is about the average time that you hear people, they sleep in their car for a few months. And then some people actually prefer it because they're like, the rent is too damn high. I can just get me a gym membership. And long as my cell phone is working and I got gas in my car, you know, I'm good. So that's why I'm stopping at that moment, at that story, at that moment in your life for you. What was that? How did that happen? How did that come about? And how did you get yourself out of it? And you're going to help some people when you talk about this.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about, like you talked about the acting too and the homelessness. Mm-hmm. So when I left or was still pursuing the music industry,
mm-hmm.
I think that I can actually do the same thing because I covered Atlanta in 6 months with the music, and I kind of pretty much knew everybody in the music industry that I needed to know. So I was like, let me try the same thing with the acting industry. So I did the same thing. I was networking my butt off, and I was going to 5 or 6 events a night. And I was still, I had a house in Athens, that I owned, a Habitat house that I owned, that I got in 2004. Mm-hmm. And then I had an apartment in Atlanta. So, and I was still working full time.
Yeah.
So I was going to tree events, and I met this guy eventually. It was like, Mona, you know, are you signed to an agent? And I was like, no, I don't know, you know, how to go about getting an agent. So he sent me this agency list from Craig's and Cannon and Associates that they send out actually every year for free. And I end up getting an agency.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, got me into acting.
Okay.
And when I do my monologue, she was like, oh, my God, have you been to workshops and stuff? And I was like, no, this is just something I want to pursue. And she added me to her roster, and I end up auditioning for Barbershop 3. And that was my first biggest film that I ever auditioned for. So as I'm, you know, in the acting industry, you see I'm hosting red carpets. I end up thinking it was a great idea to quit my full-time job and pursue it full-time.
Okay.
Well, any money coming in. Like, I will host, be an event host, and I might get $100, $125 every time I host, but it wasn't enough to pay my mortgage in Athens and also pay my rent in Atlanta. So I end up losing my home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I end up losing my apartment in Atlanta, and I caught myself sleeping in my car.
Mm-hmm.
So for a matter of 3 months, and then I'm behind on my car payment. And so I'm at this hotel one day, and I look outside, and they're towing my car.
Mm.
So now I have no home anymore, no apartment, and no car. Called a couple friends, and it gets back to what we were talking about earlier. You'll see who your friends
yeah,
are.
Yeah, who's going to show up. Amen.
So one girl told me she was on her way. I'm on my way to come pick you up for the hotel. Never showed up. And so, you know, I called a couple of friends I know, and I was able to crash at their house, for a little while and still trying to find out how will I make it, money-wise. And then I end up landing a couple gigs and was able to get an apartment again. And that lasted for a little while because, I never still got a full-time job, and went homeless again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this time my car is paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So I was paid for a car for a while. And then I end up finding out about Uber and Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
So doing Uber and Lyft and end up getting a car through Uber and Lyft and then end up buying another car. And when I met JJ, JJ would tell you I was sleeping in my car again. But this last time was by choice because the rent was too high.
Yeah.
I got a still bed YMCA mm-hmm. so I could back.
Mm-hmm.
In my car, and JJ met me. I was actually hosting, it was a basketball game.
Okay.
And I was a pundit, and JJ was the film director for that event. And we met each other, and we hung out, you know, instantly. I'll let her tell you the story a little bit, but we started hanging out, and about 2 or 3 months in, we had a Hawks game, and I told her I needed to go to the house, you know, to wash my hair, but really I had nowhere to go wash my hair. I had dyed my hair, so I had to go to the game with the dye in my head.
Mm.
So JJ kind of, she probably was looking at me kind of crazy, and she said at one point God kind of told her, like, this girl is homeless. Something is going on with her. So long story short, one day I'm on the phone with JJ, and something had happened to her car, and she was emotional because she was like, this is how I get around, this is how I make my money. And I was like, you know what, JJ, let me go ahead and tell you what I said I was going to tell you by the end of this year, because I was going to stack my money, and by the end of the year, I'm going to get me a place. I was like, JJ, you know, I'm homeless, so don't cry about what you're going through because you're going to get through it. And she was like, you know what, and it was cold. This was during the wintertime. Like, it's
what year was 20
this? 20-some degrees outside.
What year was this?
Huh?
What year was this?
Was this 2016, 2018? No, this is 2018.
Is it 17 or 18,
one of them. Yeah, it was
21
now. I think we've been 3 years, so that was 2018.
So pretty recent. Pretty recent.
Yep.
So tell us what brought you to L.A.? You know, besides, you know, the entertainment industry, because that's what most of us are here for. What brought you here? How'd you get here?
Okay, so after all that, I moved back home eventually. I got a place. I moved back. Well, I moved out home with JJ. And then I moved back home when my mom died last year.
On good terms.
I got my real estate. Yeah.
You got that's that. Important. You that's very that. Important. On good terms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on good terms. and mom died last year, so she left me the house. So I own a house here in Athens. And I am I had got my real estate license all during before she died, and I was going to go into real estate. I really was going to leave entertainment alone.
Okay.
So JJ actually contacted me, wanted me to be in her show, Me and Pray Too. So I started acting again, and I started hosting again. And I met this guy, and I'm going to leave his name out. I won't even give him no credit. He manages a very huge comedian in Hollywood. Everybody knows him worldwide and overseas and in these states. And his manager, I met him 6 years ago. We dated 6 years ago, and then we dated 3 years ago. And then these last 6 months, he came and contacted me through Instagram. Was like, you know, I'm ready to be a man, and I'm moving you to L.A. You know, I want you and your daughter to move to L.A. So me and my daughter, Madison, we moved to L.A. after 6 months of dating him. And before we even got here, mind you, this man was buying me flowers every week, taking me on trips. He's the first one that took me overseas. You know, just being my knight in shining armor. And when I got to Hollywood for 12 days straight, he was somebody that I have no idea who this man is.
Mm.
And after the 12th day of him treating me mean, talking about, you know, Hollywood don't like black women, you'll never be without me, you can't cook, you can't clean, you're going to be homeless again, you ain't nothing. Like, for 12 days straight, I really did not know who this guy was. And one of my friends told me to tell her about his personality, and she was like, you're with a narcissist. Like, you're with a narcissist. I'm like, a who? I've heard the term before, but I'm with a narcissist? And I go to research, and I'm like, oh, my God, he is every single character.
His picture was there.
Dictionary, and then, I don't know. But he might as well be. Like, he fits narcissism to the T. And I was like, I cannot believe, like, this man has uprooted me. But after 12, he was in Vegas. One of his clients got a WWE deal. And while he was in Vegas, me and my daughter packed our stuff up. And we left, and I decided not to move back to Georgia. I decided to stay in Hollywood. So we went from Hollywood to homeless to hotels, and something happened last month. I'm going to put it in my book, Hollywood Couldn't Change Me. I couldn't see my daughter for 2 days. I'm going to leave it like that. I can't
okay.
put it in my
book. Okay. You know, and we got so many other things to cover, but thank you for sharing your story. Believe me, you're helping people. Our listeners, they're tuning in from YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, even behind the scenes, Instagram Live. We're everywhere. iTunes, Apple Music, we're broadcasting everywhere. So you're really helping people. And speaking of that, that call-in number is 646-378-0355. Press 1 to be heard so we'll know that you want to speak with one of the ladies or all of us. You know, we're really going to get into some things. Chatters, Tony? Hmm? Oh, I thought you said I thought you said we got Tariq. I'm like, Tariq? Any from Power? the people are chiming in on Instagram. They're just sending love, a lot of hearts. They are, you know, these are very compelling stories. So a lot of people are just sending their love, you know, chatting it up with us. And so that I won't be so greedy, would you ladies like to ask Mona J any questions?
Sometimes, and this is probably not a question that you decide to leave that relationship or leave
mm-hmm.
the comfort of that relationship, you were leaving for the unknown. And sometimes I applaud women who are able to do that, because many, many women out here, it could be a man also, are in relationships, and sometimes they're verbally abused. Abuse is abuse. It doesn't matter mm. if it's verbally or physical.
Mm.
But
how did you find the strength, especially leaving, I'm not sure how old your daughter is, but leaving the comfort of a confined, because you're with a successful man, so I'm sure you've it's in a very comfortable home. So how do you find the strength to basically leave, to go into the unknown and go back into a situation where, you know, hey, I'm going to have to either swim, sink, because you've been there before. So I applaud you for having the strength to do that, to basically
get up time and time again.
Yeah.
You know, homeless, like three different times, she said.
But it shows the resilience of you as a strong sister. So I just think that sometimes that can be empowering. It could be an empowering story to a lot of us out here, because a lot of us as humans, whether it's a job, we sometimes get so comfortable in the comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So we stay stagnant. And sometimes you have to be uncomfortable to grow. Back to what JJ was saying earlier. So we applaud you for that.
Give her a hand clap, Tony.
Thank you. She asked me, like, where did I get that strength, you know, knowing that I've been there before. And I think that's what it was, because I've been here before, and I've always brought myself up, you know, out of the situation. So it's always that don't give up, you know, inside of me. Mm-hmm. I'm this, you know, teenage mother, high school dropout. You know, I didn't talk about the abusive relationship. You know, I didn't talk about me being raped with a gun to my head. You know, homeless, you know, without a father. I've been through everything, you know, imaginable, except for getting on drugs. And I'm still here standing strong to tell the story. Mm-hmm. But I don't like what I've been through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for anybody, like, no matter what you've been through in life, you know, it's easier said than done to just keep on going, because a lot of people like to hold on to that unhealed hurt that's inside of them, probably started as a child. But instead of me, you know, holding on to that hurt, I accept that pain, and I let that pain allow me to grow.
Yeah.
Amen.
A lot of women can relate to that. We actually have someone chiming in, Renisha, on Instagram Live, and she said, oh, my God, the things we hide. I was in that same situation at 16, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, we're going to help some people today, you know. People are giving the courage to continue to speak out and to keep going. I mean, like I said, you got up time and time again, you know.
And that's what I'm saying. It shows the resilience, and sometimes you sometimes doubt yourself out there, if you're listening, sometimes you doubt yourself, but when you believe and trust that, I'm sure Mona can testify, when you believe and trust their God, sometimes you just have to put it in that man's hands upstairs, you know, and says, I'm going to go out on this one and faith. And the faith sometimes is the empowering that just makes you do stuff. And I come back, the reason why I come back to say this, with all, when we talk about highs and lows and valleys, we all been, no matter, I always say homelessness is a state of mind. I work with an organization downtown, and you would never believe the color. The homeless has no gender. It has no look. The people that you see downtown or on the streets are not just the homeless people. They're actually, I think, mentally, I always say, I think those people are mentally, something happened to them mentally, they consider and they checked out. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other looks, and I'm sure Mona, JJ would say this, of homelessness.
Yes.
You know, it's just not being in losing your home, or just being in a shelter, or being at a friend's couch—it's so many different layers of homelessness. Mm-hmm. So, I just applaud her for sharing that amazing story and being so resilient.
Yeah, I mean, homelessness was a pandemic before it was. There was a pandemic called COVID, you know, something that plagued us. Sister JJ, is there anything you want to ask Mona before we move on?
I think the question that I would ask, because I know her story
so well, so, yeah.
Yeah, all too well. So I don't think it's a question for myself. I think it's a question for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, what's the ultimate goal for you in your journey? Because it was too easy to just say, you know what, let me get this 9-to-5, give
mm-hmm.
me an apartment, give me a house, and just stay on the safe side.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your motivation or your ultimate goal? I know what your motivation is, but you tell the audience what your ultimate goal is, the reason why, no matter how many times you, I don't want to get knocked down, but go through your trials and errors, you keep pushing. What is that? What is that goal that's keeping you
mm-hmm.
motivated?
I always say this. It's two things. A lot of times people like to define themselves by what they do. Like, you are JJ, the writer, producer, actress. Amira, you are a singer, you're a host. Annette, you are creative director. You know, you are brand ambassador. These are the things that we do. These are our titles. It's not necessarily who we are. Who you are and what you do is two different things. Who you are, now what you do will allow, the person that you are allows you to do the things that you do, but ultimately inside of you, you do those things to what? To help others. My ultimate goal is to be successful, not just for myself, so that I can pay it forward, because it's who I am. You know, I could say, oh, I'm this, you know, big actress, and I got the Oscar, and, you know, I'm a host, and, you know, I'm a real estate agent. I can say this all day. This is my title. But who I am is the person that wants to succeed so I can have the money, because you can't help nobody a lot of times until you can help yourself. So I want to put myself in a successful position to help myself so that I can help others.
Thanks. Beautiful. You know, and we're gonna continue this discussion. I do want to talk with Sister JJ before we go any further, and we'll all jump back in and continue to talk amongst each other, because, like I said, we're helping each other, and we're going to give, you know, advice. We're going to give connection and encouragement throughout the rest of this time that we're here. But I really want to get into Sister JJ's story. This is another compelling story of triumph and overcoming and never giving up and being beyond zealous, being beyond faith, but being a knower of the light, a seer. You can see the light, so you continue to walk towards it. She is the talent herself, the actress, the entrepreneur. She owns two publications, two magazines. One, you know, really appropriately named Boss, like that's an appropriate title for her in anything that she does. She is just a dynamic, renaissance, phenomenal woman as well, and I cannot wait to get into your story. You guys, welcome again to JJ. Y'all give her a hand clap.
Blessings, blessings. Wow, where do I start?
Well, I have a question. Where are you originally from?
I am originally, I was born in Petersburg, Virginia, raised in Baltimore, Maryland. So I claim the DMV area because I went to school, was raised, family went to school in Petersburg, and I went to school, graduated, lived, and was raised in Baltimore. So I can't just name one. I have to show love to both.
Okay. And so I know you're into the entertainment industry as well as other things now. But as a little girl, what was that thing budding inside of you, growing inside of you? Was it the entertainment industry? Were you always the showstopper? You know, did you always put on the little musicals around your house? You know, who were you when you were a little girl, and when did that bug start to really, you know, grow inside you and make you who you are today?
Well, I am that person that was born with the bug.
Okay.
I was that child that wanted the attention. I didn't know I couldn't sing until I didn't know I couldn't sing. But I could act, and rap came out, so I got into rapping because I knew I liked music.
Yes.
I knew I liked writing. Shout out to Miss Bias, my English teacher. There's a reason to stay in school for those who don't feel as though mm-hmm. it is. Miss mm-hmm. Bias introduced me to poetry, which henceforth introduced me to story writing, writing rhymes and things of that nature. So English was important, although I wasn't interested in what they were teaching. I was just interested in what helped me. And that was writing, like I said, writing poems and writing stories and acting. I was that person that like could literally repeat something that I saw on TV. What is it? Not a different world. We're talking about Willis, that show. I can't even think of it right now. The Jeffersons and
yes.
Just all of those shows. I'll be that person that will repeat or memorize it and repeat it. That was just me. I love acting. I love everything about entertainment. I loved it. Diana Ross, The Supremes, just anything that was dealing with entertainment as a child, I loved it. I just loved it. But I came from a background, an Islamic background.
All right.
Came from a background of family had to work. You went to school, you went to college to get a job, not even a career, but a job that would pay the bills and take care of the family, to pay the bills, to take care of your family, to pay the bills.
Yes.
Take care of your family, to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's the background that I came from. And my dad, my stepdad, shout out to Kenneth Hines, he worked and worked and worked and paid the bills. And my mom wanted a little bit more. She was into entrepreneurship, and she opened a bakery, and she worked for herself, but she paid the bills. And that to me just didn't wash. It's like, okay, I get the entrepreneur, but there's a difference between being an entrepreneur and a business person. And I'm an entrepreneur, so I have, and I'm a businesswoman at the same time. So I have nothing against entrepreneurs, but in growing and learning the difference, it brought in my knowledge, because if I can't be away from my job and still make money, then I'm still working.
Right.
Working to pay the bills. So I tried out for, I was very small in school, the oldest of seven, had to help take care of the children. It was always made for me to know. Even if I didn't know, I had to know. So I had to put on that mask of knowing. And it was okay for me to go to school and be a cosmetologist. My mom and my stepdad divorced and moved to Baltimore. My mom became a cosmetologist, and she made good money. But she worked, and she worked, and she worked to pay the bills.
So by this time, how old are you? Because you're constantly seeing these examples of a lot of hard work.
Exactly.
But no
so
progression.
By this time, I'm about 13, 14, no, about 14, I believe, because I wanted to try out for the school for the arts.
Okay.
Now, in Baltimore, a lot of cities, you have trade schools, you have specialty schools, and so I wanted to go to the Baltimore School for the Arts.
Okay.
And my mom wanted me to go to Mercantile or it was a city, and that was the trade school.
Okay.
I wanted to go to a school for the art.
Right.
The trade school, I did eventually end up going there because I didn't have anyone, and I'm not beating up on my parents.
No.
This is what they were. This is where
yeah.
they were.
No one to advocate for you.
I got the audition at the school for the arts, but because I didn't understand the art of the arts, I didn't know what to do to go in to audition.
Okay.
And back then, it was very, very hard for black kids to get into
schools for the arts. You wouldn't think that even the, because it's, Baltimore is a predominantly black city per
Chocolate
se.
Chocolate City, right.
Right, but it was very, very, very hard. My teachers were teachers that taught us how to go and be the busy bees.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a teacher that could groom me for the arts. So I went and I tried out, and unfortunately I didn't make the school for the arts, but I got into Mercantile, and that was for business and for cosmetologists. And I didn't finish the cosmetology program.
How did you feel walking into that trade school? How did you reconcile that in your mind, knowing that you felt more like an entertainer than a worker bee, as you put it?
Well, being the oldest,
mm-hmm.
It's almost like you're coming from the old school. So it's like, well, you know, you tried your hand. You just got to do what you got to do. So my mom's like, she had own her own salon. And she's like, okay, if you go for business, you can help run the salon. If you need, you can come and get your cosmetology license. You can go under me and get your, do it as a but not go to the actual school. So that was the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the plan. And so I was like, okay, whatever. So then I discovered, because what's in you is going to always shine. And so I discovered I could rap. I'm a chameleon. So wherever I go, I'm going to be okay. I'm always going to blend. I'm always going to find something that I can work with. And
who was the first person that said, girl, you got lyrics? Because I was going to say bars. Bars is more today. So back then, who was saying?
Back then, girl, you got
some
lyrics.
So
shout out to my cousin. He's deceased, but shout out to my cousin Curly. We were all kicking it. And, of course, we were singing old school stuff. But if you could flow with the old school and keep up the rhythm, then you had
lyrics, right?
You know? But then you come back and put you in the, my name is Lady J, you know,
uh-huh.
And then he's like, yo, okay. And so
did you go into the studio like right away? What was that?
No, I actually snuck into the studio. I didn't listen to my mom. I was hard-headed. I did, and I know the energy is heavy, and I want it heavy because I want people to feel where I was, because when you are an artist and you're not allowed to fly,
mm-hmm.
you do feel in prison.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know that I was fighting for my key to be free.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought I was doing what the hell I wanted to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I went on and I started rapping, and I was Lady J the Hit Mistress. And, my cousin
the hit
was
mistress.
Doing listen to that name now.
The Hit Mistress.
It's something, exactly.
Now, I didn't find it, but can we find it somewhere? Can we find any of your music?
I wish you would have told me I would have sent it to you, because my brother-in-law sent me a piece right when KRS-One wanted to talk with my managers about me. I got locked up, so that's why I said listen to the Hit Mistress part, because I actually, you know, back then people will write you in rhymes for you and all of that stuff, and you know, a lot of it was imaginary. You know, we wanted to do it. It was only a few of us that was actually doing the stuff that we said we were doing.
So you do have it. You have a copy of that, though?
I have a song that we did called Black Man, Take a Stand.
Oh, okay. So you couldn't email it. Okay. Cause I was going to say
that.
And we'll
like,
play it before the, we'll play
it.
Hey, we can adjust. We could play it right before the end of the show.
Yeah,
we sure could.
Yeah. Yeah, so we did that, and that's where it started. It started there,
mm-hmm.
and it started with the freedom, and it started with me rapping, and just still doing hair.
Yeah,
because I knew I need to make money.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, Bill.
So, and, you know, and I want to, you know, continue to, you know, take you through your story and let the people get to know you and know who you are. And I know what's coming next. So I really want to, I want to dive into that. You know, you actually spent some time incarcerated.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And I really want to take me through that journey. You know, a lot of us are, you know, one mistake or one mishap or one situation away from, you know,
having
our freedom taken away. So,
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So, I wow. So my family, we are entrepreneurs and workers, but we are entrepreneurs illegally and legally.
Okay.
And so, as I said, my mom had her salon, and I worked in the salon, and she opened up a salon in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the salon in Baltimore, and I met this girl, Tanya. She's gone on, but shout out to her. She was like, hey, you know, because I was making money as a cosmetologist.
Yeah.
So I really wasn't, you know, I wasn't like, I wasn't happy,
okay,
that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
But I was banking.
Right.
And back then, you know, in the 80s and stuff, in the 90s, you know, the drug thing was really big. And so I had the dope boyfriends and, you know, going through all the bull crap that you go through with being a dope boy girlfriend. And my homegirl was like, hey, yo, you can, you know, make this money and we ain't got to take all this crap. And I'm like, what you talking about? And so I started off at the bottom. She's like, you know, ask me how much money I make a week. And I was making like anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 a week doing hair, banking money.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
It was nothing. You know, that's when we was wearing the Sassoons and the Jordaches and all that. And, you know, Nike's always been around. We still wearing the Nikes, all of that stuff. So I had all of that stuff. I'm trying to think of all the name brand and the Dookie ropes and all of that. You know, and so because I'm a cosmetologist, I kept my hair laid and all of that stuff. And so Tanya approaches me with, you know, this proposition to make like a couple of grand in one day.
Yes.
Just going to New York and coming back. So this is before they got hip to, you know, putting it in your panties and, before they got hip to all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, bet. Now, don't ask me what I can never tell you why I said yes. All I know is the numbers made sense in my head. I'm going to make in one day what I made in a week. And I really don't even want to do this.
Right.
So let's go do it.
And
that's how I got into the drug game. And I moved up from being a mule,
okay,
because that's what I started off at. And I started dealing with this other cat and just moved up a little bit. And then she taught me how to pinch him and, you know, tax him, because that's what you get. Mm-hmm. You get taxed.
Mm-hmm.
And the kick of it is to make sure you don't get caught, because if you get caught, then that's your life.
Mm-hmm.
So she taught me how to tax him, and then we were I don't want to give ingredients
right.
and stuff of what you do, because I don't want no entrepreneur.
Yeah. No worries.
And be like, oh,
no worries.
Sister JJ told me what to do. But we would be on one side of Baltimore, and then we'd go to the county and do what we do. And that's how we started getting our come up. And then I decided, you know, I'm going to get my own little crew too. You know, I started really getting like a dude mentality,
because
I was raised around dudes anyway. And so I was like, shoot. And then I was I was still rapping. I'm still rapping.
It was the whole lifestyle.
And yeah, you know, I was like, I was Lady J the Hit Mistress, you know. So it was like, yo, I'm hitting it. You know, transform it to another. What I got, you want to have it. A night upon the mic, because it's time for me to grab it like a shot from the 3-point line at the buzzer. Tangle with the vendor when you sweater never was a better or better shorty girl. I keep you moving. Nothing from the pig of red meats in the diet. The favor, I don't slaver. That's what we need to try. Check it out.
Hey,
so that's what I was doing.
Where you at, Tony? You late. You know what you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. What you do, you ask me for a track.
That's what I was doing while I was slinging.
Right, okay.
And then I go to Virginia because I could get double of what I was getting in Baltimore. And it's like, yo, the competition is less. And so I ended up getting knocked off in Virginia. And that was like an embarrassment to my family because my mom is like, yo, your daughter is a freaking queenpin. So, you know, we was facing 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
The judge, you guys can look that up. We was facing 50 years. And they reduced it down to 10. Cut it down to 10 and reduced it to 5. And I made first parole. I never snitched on anybody. Couldn't snitch on anybody because if I did, I mean, I got the note. I got the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, my homegirl, even though I shot her out because the reason why, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And she took my calls, all of that. I mean, the game is grimy. They take your calls until they know that you're not going to do what they think you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you're on your own, mm-hmm. you know? And so I ended up with 5 and I made first parole after 2
mm-hmm.
and came home, but got locked up again, man, because the streets was calling me.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you know, it was just like, God knew I had, I'm just giving y'all because I know we got time mm-hmm. is of an essence. So, God knew I had a love for kids, and he knew I have a love for people. See, I'm one of those people, I don't tell folks I don't like people. And I just don't like unsavory people, mm-hmm. but I love God's people.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this shorty girl stay with me. Her dad was beating up on her mom, and I was like, yo, 2 things. You know, we can do what we can do, or you can just come stay with me. But if you call me again and tell me that I need to come get you, I'm telling you, we're going to do what we got to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she decided to stay with me. She ended up introducing me to this dude. To make a long story short, me and this dude got into it. And I had just sent my brother. My brother came and got all the weed. Mm-hmm. I dabbled with nobody but God. He came and got all the weed. And he was like, yo, Jay, let me get the piece because this dude won't buy everything, but just in case it's a setup. I'm like, okay, bet. He took it, and this dude all but broke my door down. And when the police came, it was just crazy. I ain't even supposed to be in the apartment because I'm an ex-felon, and my homegirl, she got the apartment for me. See, people don't realize when you're an ex-felon, there's a lot of things you're not privy
yep,
to.
Yep, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? And so I ain't even supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, my homegirl was like, she's from West Africa. She's Senegalese. So I had to talk like I was from another country so that I cannot, you know. And so, yeah, you know, so I ended up staying there just a little bit longer. And then I moved. And I'm still trying to find my way, you know. So I'm like, I'm in a dark place because I'm not happy. I'm not feeling me. I got my family telling me, come back to the workforce, you know, get it together. You know, and I'm like, okay, bet, let me go to college. So I go to college, you know, and I knock that out. You know, I'm smoking weed because I'm not happy. I'm trying to find my way. You know, dudes, I mean, I got 3 kids. At the time, I had 3 kids. I wanted all of my kids to be special so everybody got their own daddy. See if y'all caught that.
Everybody got their own daddy just so they can all be special. Like, no, that's my daddy. That ain't your, hey, that's my daddy. You ain't can't say that's your daddy. That's my daddy all by himself.
All by myself. Me and you got shame. Me and you got shame. So, yeah, you know, I'm doing me. And just through the journey, just one day, and when I come home, you know, my mom don't want me to talk about what's going on. Everybody just want to, you know, clean a little
yeah.
rug. And,
yeah, act like it don't exist.
Yeah, she's a late bloomer. She going to get it together. You know, just give her a minute, blah, blah, blah. Keep in mind, I didn't realize that I had a lawsuit against the state because you can live your alternative lifestyle. I ain't got nothing to do with that. But I just like men. I always say this because I was when I was in jail, the CEO propositioned me. I was like, if I say something, they're going to ship me out. Or I'm going to use this opportunity to do what I got to do.
Right.
So he had hit me up, sent me a letter. This is real talk. I can't make it up. Sent me a letter, gave me the number to call. Make a long story short, I got on the trustee board, and, you know, we was rocking it. It happens in prison.
Wow.
We was rocking it. Yeah, mine was volunteer. I was like, y'all can do what y'all want to do, man. I'm living over here. I'm all right.
So. You know, we want to show the people as the reemerge woman you are, as the ever-evolving woman you are. We want to show the people what you do and the, you know, the contribution that you've made to our entertainment industry. We have a clip or two. Just show the first one. Let's just see which one that is. Oh, yeah. Let's go to the other one. I mean, that's advertising. There we go.
Hello, kings and queens, beautiful people out there. I just wanted to take a moment to talk with you about an event that is fastly approaching, Models Against Cancer, Atlanta 2021. This is actually my 8th production. We didn't do the production last year because of COVID, but we're not letting anything stop us this year. Models Against Cancer is the event where we honor cancer survivors, we recognize cancer fighters, and we pay tribute to those that have lost their lives to cancer. We have speakers to come in and give us awareness about cancer. We have testimonies. We have entertainers and designers and models. And it's just an event that we come together as one, utilizing our gifts and talents to remind those who are in the fight and the families of those who have lost the fight and for the survivors that we're here for them. We're here with them, and we're in the fight with them. No, we can't cure you from cancer, but we can be right there with you as you're going through, encouraging you, motivating you, inspiring you, praying for you, and reminding you that you are still beautiful, you're still worthy, and you're worth the win, you're worth the fight, and your life is worth it. You can do it. Each year, we give one cancer fighter a monetary donation. That is called the Najee Norlings Stiff Recipient Award. The reason why we do that is because we want individuals to know that we are not just talking the talk, but we are walking the walk. We would love to be able to bless more. And as we grow, we will be able to do that. This year, we are honoring 8 cancer survivors. That's right, 8. We started off honoring 2, then it moved up to 4. And this year, we are at 8. This is not your traditional fashion show. No, this is an event. And it's a convention center, so there will be speech.
What a way to pay it forward. I think that's the theme. You know, that's why I've been calling you guys phenomenal women, you know, with your stories of perseverance, you know, turning into triumph. And then the way that you all selflessly give back and just pay it forward. You guys just continue to pay for it. It's almost like, you know, you guys answered the call once you and figured out who you are and why you're here. You took the call very seriously, and somehow you realized that as you continue to give to others and give yourself to others, give of yourself to others, that's where your blessings are. I always say people like that understand that their blessings sit right at the feet of God, and they know where their blessings come from. And unfortunately, you know, we want to see other people like ourselves do the same thing and treat us the way we treat them. And we are all too often, we keep realizing it doesn't work that way. But when you get that calmness in your spirit, in yourself, when you get that knowing in your spirit, and you understand where your blessings come from, you can execute your job on this earth flawlessly. And I believe that's what you're showing us, Sister JJ, with how your story has gone from a girl and you know, Maryland is not a small town, so to speak, but it could be small in the grand scheme of things. But you decided that, well, you knew something inside of you was stirring, and you knew it was bigger than what you saw. Just like Annette, just like Mona, you guys knew it was bigger than what you could visually see, and you started to create the real life for yourself. And while you were also, you know, incarcerated, you know, I'm sure you did the work there as well. I'm sure that you were able to be a witness to someone and help change and affect somebody's life. I'm sure, before we even, you know, get there. But what you did when you came out to correct those things, what you did when you came out to evolve in your greatness is what we want to applaud today and shine a light on. So thank you, Sister JJ. go ahead, Annette.
I was saying your story is so amazing because it's when you talk about living in your truth, that's living in your truth. And at the beginning of the show, you said something which resonates with me was when mistakes are made, it's about basically owning up and standing up. And a lot of people, where we get stuck is not acknowledging what we throw a carpet over it and think it's going to stay under the carpet. And with your story is you actually said it's about growth. So you show that, hey, that where I've been on my journey is not defining who I am as, you know, Sister JJ. So that's so powerful and important.